California's getting all the attention, as usual, but in Nevada, the drought also tightens its grip day by day. 3 years of winters lacking adequate snowfall, hot summers with little rainfall are taking their toll on Nevada's already dry landscape. Farmers and ranchers are struggling to maintain a livelihood as operating and feed costs continue to soar. Droughts, of course, are a part of life in the West, but many ranchers say this one is unique because it seems to keep going on and on. Joining us by phone from the Smith Creek Ranch is ranch manager Dwayne Combs. His ranch is about 85 miles east of Fallon, and it is out of irrigation water. Dwayne Combs, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Smith Creek Ranch is out of irrigation water, as I just mentioned. So where are you getting the water you need to grow and feed and water your animals?
Well, most of our cows are on permit right now out on the public land, but we rely on the irrigation water for supplemental winter feed and as well as pasture, and we're just going to drop back and punt. We're trying to drill some wells and things like that to get some water out of the ground, but for us, we deal with runoff surface water, and it's been pretty tight.
So what are you doing in the meantime? If the wells haven't worked out, are you trucking in water? Where are you getting it from?
No, we're just gonna hunker down, and we probably will have to the supplemental feed that we need for this coming winter. We're just gonna have to shell out the money and buy it, and it's gonna be expensive.
What about your neighbors, other ranchers, in a little bit east of you, in eastern Nevada? Are they having similar water problems?
I think it seems like the east of us is a little better shape, but it's been a funny year, Dave. We've got hydrologically we're in trouble because we don't have any runoff, but we've had a pretty good grass year. Vegetatively, it's been pretty good, and so actually for feed right now the cows are doing fine, but it's just the surface water that's tough for us this year.
Hmm. So are you pooling feed and other resources to make it easier to cope?
Yeah, that's what we're doing. We'll try to button up some other lease ground. Hopefully we'll get some stubble off of some of the farms, the farmers around. And like I said, we're going to try to hang and rattle as best we can.
Mm. Is it even possible at this point to get enough water to feed the stock?
It's going to be tough. We're going to probably on our permits. We're probably going to reduce again. We're down about 30% of what we could normally run out, and we've had to sell some cows, and ultimately we may have to sell a few more cows, which is tough for a cow calf operation. It's like selling off a skilled labor force. Those old cows, they know the country, know how to make a living here, and do a really good job for us, and they're hard to replace.
Yeah. Now, as I understand it, Smith Creek Ranch runs about 1,000 cows generally. We had heard that drought is forcing some ranchers to cut the size of herds by up to about 10%, but you're saying more like 30% for you. Are you thinking about thinning the herd even further?
Well, the 30% is what we've taken off of what we typically run on the public land. We have reduced about 10%
okay.
as far as what we've sold.
Mm-hmm.
The others, we're holding them on the private ground and trying to get feed to them. Like I said, the last thing you want to do, we've got to protect the resources that is the top priority. But my gosh, you hate to get rid of those old native cows. They really are an important, valuable part of our operation.
Hmm. Have you made your first alfalfa cut of the year?
No, we're just we had enough water to get one cutting, and we'll probably lay it down next week, and then we're going to be we're going to be done. So usually we get two cuttings, and this year we're going to get one.
You're just going to get one. Hay prices, we're hearing, are at about $300 a ton, which is an all-time high. And some farmers are sending hay to dairy farmers in California, which has got its own drought problems. So where does that leave you if you need to buy feed?
It kind of, I don't know if it's a good thing. Well, it is a good thing. You know, the cow prices are up, and we're getting good money for calves, and so we're able to have a little more money to put towards some feed. But that's gonna the hay prices are a real concern with the ranching community. It seems all the friends that I've got that I talk to, that's a concern. Usually dairy hay is a premium, but I'm afraid this year any kind of hay is going to be a premium, and it's just going to make it tougher. We'll get through it. We'll tighten our belts, and that's one thing agriculture is very good at is tightening their belts and making do with less. So we work with our partners, try to work with our federal partners as close as we can on this ranches. And, there's some programs through NRCS, the Natural Resources Conservation Service, and Farm Service Agency, to try to help us get by. But we just have to knuckle down and do the best we can sometimes. Mm.
You have said that the drought of 2000 and 2001 was pretty tough. But this one's, going on 3 years and more now. Beyond that sheer length of time, what else about this drought stands out as especially severe?
You know, it's the biggest thing in my mind is just the time of it. You know, I think we've had drier individual years, but just collectively, year after year, it just drags. It's dragging on, and so that's probably in my mind the toughest part about it.
Hmm. Eastern Nevada got a little bit of rain last month, but it didn't bring much of any relief. Are you pinning your hopes, and other ranchers too are pinning hopes on the expected arrival of El Nino? I mean, it's the weather phenomenon says warmer than average surface water temperatures, meaning strong storms, at least in the past. I mean, is that what you're pinning your hopes on at this point?
Well, I don't know. We're hopeful that, an El Nino, if we get an El Nino in this part of the Great Basin where we're at, it will get us good moisture. And with that, they're talking about possibly we might get some monsoonal-type storms here later in the summer, which will really help us out. So I guess the quick answer to your question is, yeah, we'll take anything we can get, and whether it's El Nino, El Lotso, whatever we can get, we'll take it.
Hmm. I've seen some numbers suggesting the amount of rain and precipitation needed just to replenish everything is really pretty ridiculous. But how much precipitation do you need to ease the tightness at this point? What's going to allow you to get through?
You know, I think if we get, this country's pretty pretty resilient. You know, I think if we get a good average winter, that's going to be a boon. I think that a lot of times we tend to underestimate the desert. You know, we worry about drought, but we live in a desert, so we've got to, at least from my standpoint, we've got to give the land the benefit of the doubt, and I think it'll come back. I think if we get a couple of normal years in a row, I think at least for the ag folks, I don't know, it's a whole different story when you start talking about water for the cities, but for us, all we want is average, and we're going to be happy.
Mm. Dwayne Combs is the ranch manager at Smith Creek Ranch, about an hour and a half east of Fallon. Dwayne, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, sir.
We're now joined by Bo Uriano, who's a hydrologist with the U.S. Natural Resources Conservation Service, and he's joining us from the studio of KUNR in Reno. Bo, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Well, you've heard how Duane Combs' ranch is suffering from the drought. We're in year three. What are the odds of a normal precipitation season coming up?
Well, it's really too early to make any estimations of the odds, but with a strong signal from an El Nino year, we could see the higher-than-average precip events and a better winter. Right now, they're only forecasting a mild to moderate El Nino, and that's still only about 80% chance of that even occurring. So it's a little too early to say what we're expecting for next year, but typically any kind of El Nino signal is going to give us a slightly better chance of having a good year.
Now, on the other hand, you've heard how Duane's ranch is suffering from the drought. We're in year three of this, so are we looking at permanent reductions in our water supply?
Well, you know, that can change from one year to the next. I mean, 2011 is a great example of how really quickly the whole landscape can change.
Is the long-term projection, though, for reductions? I mean, you know, very often ranchers and farmers are, you go on wishful thinking, you hope for the best. But what should they be planning for at this point?
Well, I think any increases in efficiency of watering, like installing pivots, the NRCS is actively helping farmers install better efficient irrigation. And that's going to really help us use less water and get more from the water that we do use. I really think that's the way people need to be heading, even if we get better water situations as we continue to grow. We're going to need more and more water.
Now, also joining us from KUNR is Justin Huntington, an assistant research professor with the Desert Research Institute. Justin, welcome to KNPR.
Thanks.
You've been working with Duane Combs to look at the impact drought has on the range. What's your take long term? I mean, over the long haul, are ranchers like Duane going to need to prepare for permanent reductions in the water available?
Well, that's a good question. Currently, the global climate models suggest kind of a mixed bag between small increases in precip to decreases in precip over the long term. It's highly uncertain in the Great Basin region, whereas the Pacific Northwest, most GCMs project increases in precipitation, in the Southwest, decreases. And in the Great Basin, we're kind of in the middle.
Okay, so Great Basin in the Southwest, you're saying drier for the long term, less precipitation.
That's the ensemble median of, you know, hundreds of GCMs suggest that, yes. Mm.
So what can farmers and ranchers do to minimize the impact they're going to have on drier and drier land?
Well, like Bo said, being more efficient in terms of water applications, center pivot efficiencies are key. But also with that, being more efficient, you also spread the water around more evenly, and you actually consume more water. So your consumptive uses often increase when you become more efficient. And when you're pumping, say, groundwater, to apply that water, groundwater can start to deplete faster.
Now, also with us is Pat Mulroy. She's a former general manager of the Southern Nevada Water District, of course. She's now senior fellow of climate adaptation and environmental policy at Brookings Mountain West and holds the Mackey Distinguished Faculty Associate position at the Desert Research Institute. Pat, welcome back. It's good to have you with us.
It's great to be here.
You're no stranger to conversations about things like this. What have you heard over time from ranchers and farmers and such in the state of Nevada? I mean, are they all looking to the future and thinking they've got to learn to live with less?
Well, I think many of them are, and I think many of them are struggling with the prolonged drought that we've been experiencing. And, you know, that drought is the same drought phenomenon that's happening in California. And when you see little rural communities in the Central Valley that have now 50 to 60% unemployment, the magnitude of the impact of that lack of water resources becomes profound. And for Nevada, it's the same thing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in fact, I'm really glad we started talking about this, because here in Southern Nevada, there's been, over the course of the last week, the myth has been spread that Las Vegas is going to, you know, dry up and blow away. Those stories have been appearing in the British press, and part of me wanted to laugh, and the other part of me was pretty annoyed. I mean, that was some pretty irresponsible journalism that occurred in those publications.
What did they miss with that irresponsible journalism? What were they not reporting on or not seeing in the story?
If you read the British story, you would think Lake Mead had one customer, and that was Southern Nevada. The impact of this spreads over seven states. I mean, Southern Nevada, if there is that Scripps-style disaster that is a possibility, then it will ripple through the entire Colorado River Basin, because the upper basin has to be pretty darn dry for Lake Mead to get to that level of catastrophe. And if that happens, you're talking about the fifth largest economy in the world collectively in the Colorado River Basin. So I think that the actions that the states have been taking to buffet and to bring Lake Mead back up didn't get any play. The fact that Southern Nevada is probably in the best position to weather the cutbacks should they come if Lake Mead starts dropping, because we've already conserved it, so that the cuts that we agreed to in 07 won't be an event here in Southern Nevada. There was a lot missing in that story. So it is always disturbing to me when somebody puts out there into the international press that Southern Nevada is standing on the brink of disaster. I mean, nothing could be further from the truth.
Okay, now take us a little further north into central and northern Nevada.
Right.
What's the story that's going on in that part?
The Sierras have been devastatingly dry. That's what's driving Southern California's drought, and that's what's driving the midsection of California's drought. The Sierras are as vulnerable as the Colorado Rockies, and they too can go either way. They can either be wetter or drier. I remember a conversation I had with Jane Lubchenco when she was the head of NOAA, and I said, so what's the probability for that region of the country? And she says, it's in a donut hole. It's all depending on the jet streams. It can be drier or it can be wetter. And so it's a 50-50 proposition. And I had to laugh at that time. But I think it's time for the state of Nevada to develop some real water strategies. I don't want to say develop a water policy, because instantaneously people try to have one size fit all. But the state needs some strategies. They need to think holistically and develop some strategies to protect those ranchers and to protect the urban areas.
We are talking about the severe drought that has impacted Nevada for 3 years and running now. Our guests include Pat Mulroy, who is the longtime director of the Southern Nevada Water Authority. She's now with Brookings Mountain West and the Desert Research Institute. Justin Huntington is with us, too, an associate research professor with DRI. Bo Uriana is a hydrologist with the U.S. Natural Resources Conservation Service. Earlier, we talked with Dwayne Combs, ranch manager who lives and works about an hour and a half east of Fallon. Are you a rancher in central and northern Nevada looking for extra water? Maybe you have had to thin your herd of cattle the way Dwayne Combs has. Perhaps you live in southern Nevada. You have seen the cost of food, energy, and water rise during the drought. If you've got some drought stories to share with us, how has this drought impacted the way you live your life? Call us. You can reach us at 702-258-3552. That's 702-258-3552. Now, we're also available online. Our website's knprnews.org, and we are on Twitter. Our Twitter handle is at knprnews. Pat, you've talked with some of the climate modelers over time, quite a few of them, I would imagine. In plain English, what are they saying farmers and ranchers in rural parts of the state are looking at over the long term?
I think for the most part, there seems to be a tendency amongst the scientists to say it's going to get drier in the west, and it's going to get wetter in the northwest and wetter in the central portion of the country. But definitively, how those temperature models correlate to precipitation, I don't think the final chapter's been written yet on that. But I don't think we wait for that final chapter to be written. I mean, you asked me earlier, what can the state do to help those ranchers and those rural communities in central Nevada? Isn't it time to begin to invest? And when you have wet seasons, and you're going to have wet seasons in every dry spell, that the recharge facilities be developed to where the groundwater basin can be recharged, to where you create banks, where you store the excesses for the times of drought. I think we need to rethink how we manage water resources in the bigger picture.
Bo Uriani, you told the Reno Gazette-Journal that 2014 could produce a snowpack and resulting runoff below levels recorded in 1976 and 77, which was the record low year before this year. Was the prediction correct?
Well, it's a little too early to say that for sure, but we definitely got a less efficient runoff than we expected. And I think by the end of July, when we can start making those statements, I think we'll see that it's right on par with those years.
You'd said earlier that the last 10 years of snow runoff in Nevada has been pretty lackluster. What will it take to return the region to a more sustainable annual runoff?
Well, you know, we just need more average years. We don't need big years. We just need average years. And that's, you know, harking back to times when there was snow up in the ski resorts. You're pretty used to seeing what you expect, and it just hasn't been that way for the last 3 years. And then before 2011, we had another stretch of pretty bad snowpack. So that reservoir of snow that we have up in the mountains just hasn't been there for us to fill up the reservoirs in the summertime.
So do you feel pretty safe looking in the crystal ball and seeing many dry years ahead?
You know, it just really matters who you are. And
well, maybe safe, and maybe safe is the wrong word, but do you think that's a pretty likely scenario?
Well, I mean, people will adapt to the water situation. I don't think there's any doubt to that. It's how much it affects them that's the real question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, spring runoff for the region's rivers and streams is something like 30 to 50% of normal. So is that a harbinger of rivers and streams running dry earlier than normal as well?
Certainly, yes.
Mm. So what does that mean for those of us who are looking at surface water, as Dwayne Combs and others do?
Well, even now, a lot of the irrigation is being cut off in the Fallon region and elsewhere, where ranchers no longer have the irrigation water to put on their fields and make new cuts of alfalfa, like you mentioned. We're expecting to see ranchers be much less productive this year, again, thinning the herd, taking measures like that to kind of protect themselves from the lack of water. We're certainly seeing the agricultural water dry up this year really quickly.
Mm-hmm. Justin Huntington, in the past, there have been, well, even today, there have been all kinds of debates about public versus private lands. Is this kind of cracking that debate back open again? Do we need to consider putting some public lands off limits to farmers and ranchers because of the drought?
That's a tough one for me to answer. I don't think I'm going to answer that. But for sure, more public assistance for private communities would definitely help.
Well, I'd genuinely like to know what you think. And I'm thinking in terms of, asking, do we need to consider it? Not saying necessarily do we have to do this right away, but do you think that's a conversation that ought to be had at some point?
Sure,
about that
why
possibility?
Not?
Yeah. I mean, if we should we look to private lands to supplement grazing rights on public lands?
That could be one of the options, you bet.
Yeah. We're talking about the severe drought that has impacted Nevada for some 3 years. Are you a rancher looking for extra water? Have you thinned your herd of cattle? Earlier in the hour, we spoke with Dwayne Combs, who is a ranch manager at a ranch about 80 miles east of Fallon. With us right now, Pat Mulroy, who is the former director of the Southern Nevada Water Authority, but she is now with Brookings Mountain West and the Desert Research Institute. Justin Huntington of the Desert Research Institute is with us as well, as is hydrologist Bo Uriana, who is with the U.S. National Resources Conservation Service. And if you've got some stories to tell us of coping with the drought, if the drought has impacted you directly, call us and tell us how you're dealing with that. Our number is 702-258-3552. That's 702-258-3552. If you're online right now, drop us a line. You can reach us at knprnews.org. Pat Mulroy, you have said that the challenge for Nevada is the perception of having more serious water problems than other states that draw water from the Colorado River because of the city's proximity to the river and to Lake Mead. Explain the challenge for us a little bit.
Well, that's a constant challenge.
Mm-hmm.
People who live in Los Angeles don't realize they're drinking water from Lake Mead. People who live in San Diego don't realize it. People who live in Phoenix don't realize it, because they don't see it every single day. But since you know, a lot of people in this community have boats. A lot of people in this community go out to the lake. It's a very real perceptual relationship between Lake Mead and Southern Nevada.
So how do you change that perception?
You just got to keep talking about it, and you've got to educate people and say, stop. This is going to have a much greater ripple effect. And the states have not been sitting around on their hands doing nothing, just letting things evolve.
And then how do you do it when the top story has been 3+ years of serious drought conditions? That's going to make the challenge extra difficult.
Well, that's just here in Nevada. Mm-hmm. I mean, on the Colorado, it's been 14 years.
14 years.
Yeah, we've had a couple of wet years in there. But like I said earlier, every drought cycle has wet years. I think what the states have been able to do is phenomenal. Look, there isn't a community in the United States that doesn't have to prepare itself for some dramatic shifts in their precipitation patterns, whether it's excess, whether it's drought, whether it's hurricanes, whether it's tornadoes, whether it's other extreme events. Our climate and our weather patterns are shifting. There is a whole new regiment and a whole new discipline around planning for future water resources that's emerging in this country. And I think the 7 states along the Colorado River are leading the way. They're 20 years ahead of everybody else. They've incorporated climate science into their thinking. They have said, all right, let's look out 10, 20 years, and let's say it gets to this point of severity. What do we do? And they put the tools and the mechanisms in place early so that the reactions can be done at the right time and to where the communities along this river system are protected. They're avoiding that very crisis that was front page in the British press.
702-258-3552 is our number. Wayne joins us from Henderson. Wayne, thanks very much and welcome to the program.
Thank you, Dave. In San Diego, I know they are building a desalinization plant that I believe costs about $1 billion and services 200,000 homes. I wonder why we haven't seriously looked at funding a number of plants somewhere in California, which would, you know, allow them to draw less water that we could then use. Has that been looked at and compared in terms of cost to bringing water in, say, from northern Nevada?
Pat Milroy?
I've had that question a million times.
I bet you have.
And it has nothing to do with cost. Dollars are not the issue in this one. First of all, the California Coastal Commission is not really keen on ocean desalters, like the one that's going up in Carlsbad. That took 10 years to permit, and it's still in court. So that is a very small facility, and it's being built to back up Carlsbad's water supply. That's it. These are very small plants. We in the Colorado River Basin, we looked at building a 1 million acre foot desalter, but it requires a nuclear power plant. Then Fukushima happened. There are so many faults running into northern Mexico and through California that to build a desalter of that size and put a nuclear power plant there is very difficult, if not impossible. Now, we are looking at smaller versions of desalters. We have been with the other states, but I think they'll emerge in Mexico rather than in California, only because the coastal area is not as developed. But I think there will come a point where there will be some exchanges, but those exchanges will only be possible when you're not in shortage conditions. Once you go into shortage conditions, I promise you those agreements are not going to allow that water to leave the place where it's created.
702-258-3552. 702-258-3552 is our number. Ron in Las Vegas, thanks for calling and welcome.
Thanks, Dave. I just have a question for, well, probably Ms. Milroy. She's probably the most knowledgeable of this. What's the possibility of taking a pipeline off the Missouri or the Mississippi River and running it across the Rocky Mountains and dumping it in somewhere into the Colorado runoff and allowing it to come into Lake Mead and so on?
That's one of those ideas I'm sure you've heard a few times too, Pat.
I have. Mm-hmm. And is it technically feasible? Absolutely. In fact, there are any number of engineering studies that have been conducted that can tell you exactly where you tap in and exactly where you deliver it. The notion that the central part of the country is getting wetter while the west is getting drier, and are there opportunities? And rather than just a straight diversion from a river that has its own challenges, be it the Missouri or the Mississippi, are there opportunities when, like right now, those systems are experiencing extraordinary flood events? Is there a way to capture those floods and allow those floodwaters to become relief in either the Ogallala, which is running dry, or further to the west? Those are the discussions that I think need to begin to happen. If we're going to experience this kind of a shift, then we need to rethink it.
All right, Ron, thank you very much for your call. 702-258-3552. 702-258-3552. Bo Urena and Justin Huntington, I wanted to get your take from Reno on Southern Nevada. Pat Mulroy was alluding to an article in The Guardian in England not too long ago, which seemed to suggest that Nevada, Southern Nevada, was basically just this enormous, gluttonous water hog. I mean, is that how Northern Nevada looks at Southern Nevada? How do you look at Southern Nevada? Do you guys look at Southern Nevada and see a water hog? Or do you see a region that's doing a pretty fine job, as Pat Mulroy suggested?
I see a region that's growing and that's in a desert. We're the lowest. We have the lowest precipitation in the nation. We're the most urbanized state in the nation. Most people live in Vegas. Most people live in Reno. Low precip, high growth rates, most urbanized state in the nation, you know, water transfers are inevitable. Reno has its own water transfers that have happened, interbasin transfers. Yes.
So does that urbanization mean that ranchers in this state kind of look around and have a feeling that they are at the absolute bottom of the ladder?
In some ways, yes, that's true. But, I mean, agriculture uses a significantly higher amount of water than any municipality would use. So, really, they have water rights that come out of certain places, and municipalities have their water rights that come out of certain places. Oftentimes, they're the same place, but those conflicts are less of a conflict than really just overgrowing the water supply that you've built infrastructure for. I think you'll see, I mean, I want to point out, too, that the Colorado River actually had a pretty decent year this year. They got slightly above average conditions in the Colorado River Basin, so we'll see that water come down through Lake Powell and into Lake Mead. That being said, the Sierras, which is really what we're focusing on in this area, they had a really poor year. So whereas Reno might have a harder time getting the water they need and the surrounding agriculture, Vegas is going to have that water come in this year, and they'll move forward and have kind of a different year than what we're seeing up here.
Pat Mulroy, that's one of the things going on in California, is that conflict between residential water usage and agricultural water usage, I think especially in the Central Valley. And it's kind of terrifying when you look at the amount of water that's required, let's say, to produce a crop on an almond tree.
Around the world, the major water user is agriculture. Hmm. It doesn't matter where you go. Agriculture, by definition, needs the most water.
Can that be balanced in an area like ours?
I don't think we have a choice. We have a planet that's going to grow by 2 billion people. We have a global urbanization wave occurring where I've heard predictions from everywhere from 70% to 78% of the world's population is going to live in urban centers. I think the time to employ and deploy the state-of-the-art technology around efficient water use and change the culture around water use has never been more acute than it is now. And I every time I come on the show, I have to say it. I have to say congratulations to the residents in Southern Nevada. I mean, we always talk about the diversion number, how much water is brought in from Lake Mead. What we don't talk about is what is our net footprint, you know, because we recycle everything. So what is our net footprint? And for the driest city in the United States to have a net footprint residentially of 75 gallons per person per day is phenomenal. So the question isn't, Can urban centers survive? Can agriculture survive? We've got to feed 2 billion additional people. But can we grow more food using the same or less water? Therein lies the challenge of the century.
Mo Uriano, I want to give you the last word with this question, which is that droughts almost always start pretty gradually, but most of the time we can get out of them with one or two very wet months. Why is it going to take a little longer and a little more this time?
Well, our reservoirs are basically puddles now. We have such little water in bank in the reservoirs right now that just to recover those reservoirs is going to take a couple good years of snowpack. In addition to that, with the amount of water that we're pumping out of the groundwater, we're actually reducing the amount of water we're putting back into the groundwater, thus actually having losing stretches of river where the more we pump water out of the ground, the more water goes into the ground when we have a decent year. So even though we might have the same snowpack, we'll see less water in the actual rivers.
Mo Uriano is a hydrologist with the U.S. Natural Resources Conservation Service. Justin Huntington is an associate research professor at the Desert Research Institute. And Pat Mulroy is a senior fellow of climate adaptation and environmental policy at Brookings Mountain West, and she holds the Mackey Distinguished Faculty Associate position at the Desert Research Institute. Thank you all very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.